This is Yin Radio. Welcome to Yin Radio. We are just getting our feet wet, starting a whole new season here. My name is Tara Howe, and I have the great honor of being the next in the line of many before and the many to come who host Yin Radio. Marie McHugh has returned to Arizona for her work, but you can also expect to hear her engaging intellect and voice on future select shows as she returns to the Palouse over the coming years. I want to give a special thanks to KRFP 90.3 for continuing to host our program and for providing the Palouse with independent radio and the freedoms that come with such commitment to freedom of speech and non-commercial radio. KRFP is indeed an under-recognized community resource, and I just want to give gratitude and respect to the ongoing efforts of Lee Robartis and the KRFP board and volunteers. Yin Radio airs every other Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. and can be streamed online at www.radiofreemoscow.org. Thank you also to the other stations who host our show and listeners across the various regions. Today's show has to do with a complex web of the local and global food sources. My guest today, Donna Mills, has been a local force in food systems and sustainability practices, and I'm very excited to speak with her about her current work, teaching what she is calling the new basics, and to bring her knowledge to you. She will also be speaking later this week as part of the Eat Local Week that starts today, being put on by Buy Local Moscow, the Moscow Food Co-op, and the University of Idaho Extension Program. But first, in order to situate ourselves into this discussion of local foods in a global world, let's dive into a little grounding of sense of place and the idea of sustainability itself. Sustainability is simultaneously a catch-all word that gets used for everything from local farming practices to long-term management of the planet, even being co-opted into business ideologies of long-term company survival. And it's a complex idea that encompasses not only land management, but human ethics as well. For instance, I have an entire book in front of me with the title, Sustainability Unpacked: Food, Energy, and Water for Resilient Environments and Societies, written by incredibly educated, experienced, and thoughtful leaders in ecosystem management. And it takes nearly 300 pages to unpack this, which is just still a book, not even policy, and certainly not action. Sustainability, as I would like to define it for today, derives more from the ideas of Val Plumwood, an Australian ecofeminist who argued against the hyper-separation between humans and nature. She sees sustainability as an ethic of nourishment and support between humans and non-human nature. She also calls for the idea that this ethic must replace the characteristic institutional structures and dominant conceptions of rationalizing found in capitalist modernity. This is loaded, I understand, so let's first focus in on the idea of local sustainability and the idea of the bioregion. David Robertson defines bioregionalism as a unit of space where, by locating ourselves there, we place ourselves in a physical, mental, and spiritual relationship with the whole. And David Landis Barnhill adds to this that we also place ourselves in a social, political, and economic relationship with the whole. The bioregional habitat, he explains, involves not merely physical space, but also social structures, economic systems, and political power. This from his article, Critical Utopianism and Bioregional Ecocriticism. Excuse me. The Palouse is our local bioregion. The USGS, in fact, has a very interesting study you might want to look up that speaks to the Palouse as a bioregion, published circa 1995. Titled Biodiversity and Land Use History of the Palouse Bioregion, Pre-European to Present, showing the native and introduced species, the changing culture and industrial impacts on the area, and concluding that the conversion of the Palouse Bioregion, particularly of the Palouse Prairie, from perennial native grass, shrub, and forest vegetation to agriculture has been so complete that it might seem a moot point to study its change. However, the processes by which the conversion occurred and the interactions between human cultures and environment influence the extent and spatial pattern of landscape change, and therefore influenced wildlife population dynamics and viability. Linking these underlying processes to the resulting landscape patterns can provide new insight and make significant contributions to science and policy. The conversion of more than 94% of the areas occupied by native land cover types makes the Palouse grasslands one of the most endangered ecosystems in the United States. Despite this loss of native habitats, no plant species or animal species have been lost from the Palouse. Our analyses show that landscape changes are rarely gradual. They are episodic and, at times, the result of breakthroughs in agricultural technology. In the Palouse bioregion, episodes of change were based on breakthroughs associated with ever more intensive land uses. Railroads enabled agricultural settlement, engines and fertilizers commercialized farming and facilitated intensified land use, and now the information superhighway is enabling former city dwellers to relocate to rural areas. Each transition has been accompanied by changes in physical and biological conditions, including significant shifts in composition. At some point in time, if soil erosion is not curtailed, the physical capacity of this area to produce food will diminish. Then we can expect a dramatic shift in both social and ecological systems. Whether these transitions are deemed favorable or not, time series studies such as this provide new insights on regional change and offer critical information upon which to base land and resource management. And again, I'm reading this straight off of the USGS website on that article I mentioned, Biodiversity and Land Use History of the Palouse Bioregion, to give us a good sense, A, of where we're living, B, what a bioregion is, and C, the state of being to help us ground today. Wes Jackson, in his book, Becoming Native to This Place, points to the idea that the majority of solutions to global and local problems take place at the level of the expanded tribe, what civilization calls community. This occurs, he and other scholars write, because it is in identifying with our places that we make choices that can be sustainable. Many of you, many of us on the Palouse can identify with that. However, most of us still realize we are quite connected to the global economy, that we are dependent on fossil fuels, that we are connected to global resources of labor as well as product, and that having a central governing body can be protective in terms of wars, disease, and other issues of more national, though of course we know these are global and, some suggest, could become increasingly global rather than national concerns. In addition, becoming too local can increase the likelihood of such things as bigotry and racism, religious hatred, poorer treatment of women, and general intolerance of new ideas. So again, why am I taking the time to explain some of these seemingly conflicting theories? Of course, I do not think that they conflict at all. The reality of our human part of existence on Earth is that we have worked through quite a variety of systems and ideologies, for better and worse, and we are now at a point where we need both the local and the global. The attachment to the land, our very existence, is the root of living. The more we can understand this connection, the more we can create a personal connection with the land, the more people invariably find ways to foster further connection on larger scale levels. Yet to deny our global reliance and to deny the enormous inequity in living conditions in the U.S. and the world at large is to deny the rest of our nature, not only in terms of our local survival, but in terms of the pretty common ethic we have of caring for one another. In discussions I have had with many others that ask these questions on a regular basis, and in the discussions that are occurring around the world, it is important to situate oneself in the complexity of the global situation when we start talking about ideas and solutions. And in order for this week's show to be true to the very rich and complex understandings of my wonderful guest, Donna Mills, I want to create this backdrop. She has been studying these issues for some time, and so when she advocates for certain things, such as embracing a new basics or grandmother knowledge, it is not from a place of being unaware. She is more than aware of the state of the being of this world, and as a result, she is using her skills, knowledge, and passion to give back and to teach others what she feels she can provide as part of the positive change we are all looking for. Hello, and welcome back to Yin Radio. That was the Alabama Shakes with Rise to the Sun. So here we are in studio with Donna Mills, who I'm going to introduce in just a moment, talking about new basics and grandmother knowledge in the context of a local and global world. Let me give you one more definition of caring for the local bioregion in the context of this global world to recap the initial intro. Country is a spatial unit. extending under the ground, into the sky, and in coastal regions out to sea, which is forever in the process of being recomposed through the dynamic and by no means always harmonious or predictable interactions of its diverse human and non-human denizens. Country is sentient, agentic, and speaking matter, and its ongoing vitality is sustained through practices of care that are inextricably social and ecological, practical and ceremonial. Caring for country demands considerable skill, knowledge, and effort, and attentive love on the part of its people who are themselves understood to share kinship ties with non-human others in their territory. This is from an article by Kate Rigsby called Spirits That Matter, in which she is describing Deborah Bird Rose's notion of caring for the land, which is incredibly relevant here today and now in terms of this time and place on the planet, and here and now in terms of speaking with Donna Mills. Let me introduce Donna Mills. She is a food systems professional who graduated from the University of Idaho in 2011 with a degree in sustainable food and farming. She is also a certified clinical nutritionist and has been a professional licensed massage therapist for the past 17 years. Her interest in food and community wellness began when she enrolled in her nutrition program while living in Cardiff, California. The program taught under the Hippocratic ideal, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. This one statement led her to the question, if this is true, then where is my food coming from? From there, she has spent her career researching food and farming systems, as well as overall community wellness and local economics. Donna lives here in Moscow with her 10-year-old daughter, Rowan, and their cat, Professor Moosey Softpaws. Love the name and love the cat. She has grown, and the daughter, and the son, of course, who she has also grown and adores, and who is now living on his own. The son, not the cat. As she closes in on her 50th year this coming winter, she feels she is the happiest she has ever been, doing what she loves, spending time with those she loves, and enjoying living in the middle of a magical meadow on the edge of town. She is a fierce champion for showing up and living your most authentic life, and I can absolutely attest to that. So Donna, thank you so much again for joining me here today. And I wondered, is there anything else that you wanted to add to that? How does that feel as a...
No, that feels amazing. Okay. Thank you. I'm just happy to be here and be able to share the things that inspire me, the things that just come out of my heart, and things that matter to the world.
Great. Well, I love having you here, and I love that you can be on this. I love that we have this forum and that you can be on this forum to share some of the things I have really gotten to know from you over the years, and especially in this time and place where we need so much more of it. Mm-hmm. So let's start right back. I guess there's always all kinds of beginnings. The beginning I'm thinking of is right now. What are you doing right now? That was the exciting part, was some information you brought to me not too long ago about your new programs and teaching the community enrichment. So if you want to give us an idea, what is your business called?
My business is called Rowan Tree Community Enrichment Courses. And under that umbrella, I have a business called New Basics, which is offering health and wellness coaching, personal food services, and also teaching community enrichment courses.
Okay. And what, I think there's been some really key changes in what you're starting to put out there in terms of really embracing these ideas of New Basics and the grandmother knowledge itself. Do you want to explain those terms for us a little bit?
Yeah, I will. The grandmother knowledge comes from the idea that I've encountered many people in their 30s and their 20s that have asked me, hey, these are really great kids classes that you're teaching, the cooking classes and sewing classes, etc. Almost kind of what I like to call radical home ec classes, things that we have forgotten because our corporations have under the guise of making things easier and quicker for our lives, our ever busy lives, they have taken cooking out of the house. They have taken home ec out of the house, and we've also taken it out of our schools. And so I have started to give this power back to some of the children that I work with around town. And I have 20 and 30 year olds that are like, telling me, I don't know how to do this either. I don't know how to can anything. I don't know how to hem a pair of pants. I don't even know how to iron something without being afraid of burning the material.
Wow. Okay.
So it's kind of come out of those ideas and, mm-hmm. and supporting self-resiliency.
Right. So because I want to ground everything also in this broader context, and because I know just how complete your background and experience of this world is, let's just visit first the idea of some of the essentialisms that might come out of that. Oftentimes, you know, when you get talking in through feminism and other aspects, breaking down past patterns, patriarchal mores, all that good stuff, right? This idea that we are going back into domestic elements can be really concerning for people in general, but especially a lot of women that I've spoken with in and out of academia get concerned the minute we start talking about these things. Do you want me to ask that more specifically, or do you want to address that a little bit?
No, I understand completely where you're coming from. And my feelings are, it's not a going back. It's a going forward. It's a coming into our own. It's a reclaiming thing. So, you know, I know I mentioned cooking and sewing, and those are very basic domestic things, of course, but there's so much more that goes on in the programs that I teach. For instance, I have tools where I teach people, how can we shop locally, and how much can we get locally? How much can we get regionally? How much can we get nationally? And then what's left out of our food budget that we're going to spend globally? So I can go more into that tool as our chats go on. But basically, it's not a paradigm, a male female paradigm, more as it is a reclaiming our communities. You know, when I moved up from San Diego 7 years ago, I moved into a little town that I had lived previously. And I thought about these little towns as I was on this 24-hour drive up from San Diego. I thought about these little towns and the fact that some of them are just drying up and blowing away in the dust. Now, Moscow is not like that. It's vibrant and amazing and full of life. But there are many little towns around our country and other countries, Spain, France. They're looking for people to come in, buy this land at super inexpensive prices, and rejuvenate this. So we have essentially moved out of our rural areas into the cities and become city dwellers, where we, like I said before, have allowed corporations to take over some of the very important and what I feel is value-based skills, and have put us kind of on treadmills without getting all a conspiracy theory or anything like that. I don't want to go there. But put us on, you know, treadmills. We go to work, we come home, we, you know, grab a box out of the freezer, throw it in the microwave, boom, we call that a meal.
Right. You know, and I don't think it matters on one level whether you are a person who adheres more to the idea that there's a lot of agency behind this happening, that there are powers that be that have purposefully set it up this way, or whether we just look at it. But we can see either way we are on this treadmill. There has definitely been a movement in this country as a whole to come back and reclaim a lot of that knowledge we've lost, and for those purposes, as it seems to me you're saying, that we can reclaim skills that we are now partitioning off to others that keep us embedded in a system that's not really working for anybody. And so can you tell me a little bit about what you've noticed with your clients? Kids and obviously in teaching the kids, it's the adults coming to you saying, please, me too. But what types of things are you noticing from them? What are they taking from this instruction?
Oh, I think they take a lot of independence home. Right. And I think they take a lot of pride in their own education and their own knowledge, increase in knowledge. And you know, within these courses that I teach, I'm a huge fan of this, of C words, cooperation, collaboration, and many more that are not flowing out of my mouth at the moment.
Radio but, does that.
Right. So, you know, there is a sense of cooperation. So when we talk, you know, and I previously spoke about our little towns drying up and blowing away, I have often encountered the question, you know, how is sustainable food and farming is going to save our world, and how is organics cannot save the world? And that's really not the appropriate question to ask. I say, why is it our job to save the world? It is not our job to save the world. It's our job to save our community. And as we do that, and we give other people tools and permission to do it to themselves, and so eventually we quilt our country back together. You know, we start rejuvenating these communities. And so within the context of teaching clients and or children in these classes that I do, these are the things that I teach. You know, it's kind of a systemic thing. It starts with food. Food is a place of joy and passion and nourishment for our souls and for ourselves. And so it's a good leaping off place. There's so many things that food can connect us to, economics and health and wealth, health, our own health, our community health, our local economics, mm-hmm. interpersonal relationships. Yeah. So,
absolutely. I'm just looking back through again, so I don't misquote it, but mm-hmm. very similar to what Val Plumwood calls the ethic of nourishment and support between humans and non-human nature. Mm-hmm. And the idea of relationship runs obviously so deep through everything. Mm-hmm. And this, I was just going to come back and read this quote that ties right into that from Jeremy Bendick Kamer in An Ecological Life. And he says what you're saying, human beings are made of relationships. The best part of ourselves is our relatedness to each other, to the world, to the sources inside ourselves that speak with something like voices, to our past and futures. We are amazing because we can relate. And when we stop relating, we stop being amazing. I think that really kind of underpins what you're driving at. Mm-hmm. And do you find too, you know, I think as I, well, let me backtrack for a second. I got to present this morning at a midwifery conference down in Grangeville. And it was just, I mean, how can you not feel full up in a room full of midwives, right? They're these wonderful, incredibly dedicated women, full of knowledge and wisdom, right? And a lot of these arts, the grandmother arts, right? Whether passed down through their generations, I mean, working quite hard to acquire. Mm-hmm. But as I was driving back and thinking through what we are going to be talking about today and the tie-in of all of this, it was the same thing we came to in this conference as well, that where you focus on your local individual issues, there also is a recognition then simultaneously of the larger institutions at play and how we continue to work on changing those. So you can be working, and I love that you're choosing to work right here, right now with what you have at hand, with what others have at hand. And I think part of that, see what you say to this, but I mean, part of that is also so that we don't become complacent. So like you're saying, you replace your sense of agency now, right? Mm-hmm. You've got this piece you can do, and you don't become complacent to the larger picture. You're nodding, so I want you to talk more about that.
Yeah, that's the one C word I am not a fan of, complacency. In fact, I was talking with a friend of mine the other day, and I said, you know, it was a particular subject that we're talking about, and they said, well, that's just the way it is. It was probably politics or something like that. And I said, is that okay with you? Is that okay with you? It's not okay with me. And that's what's happened, is we have become complacent with, well, you know, it is what it is type of thing. And that's not okay. That's not how we're going to change. Margaret Mead would be so upset to hear us say that. You know, it is, we are doing this work on a local level for a global result, because it is that community of people who rise up and say, you know what, I'm not going to accept this anymore. And I choose this. I choose that. I think what's going on right now in our world is that we're redefining our values. We can look back on the past 30, 40, 50 years and say, yeah, there's some great things about that. And we've made some great strides, and we've got great technology coming out of companies and universities everywhere, but we have lost quality. You know, we have all this quantity, and where is the depth? Where's the foundation? Where is the authenticity of quality?
Mm-hmm. Let me do this. I'm going to read something that really relates well to that from Deep Economy. We're going to play a quick song and do our station IDs and whatnot. We're going to take care of some basics and then come right back in to further questions along this line. So on that level of lack of quality, of this constant hungering for more, have you read Deep Economy, Bill McKibben?
I have read the majority of it.
The majority of it. Well, good. You've actually probably read more than I have. So let's just focus on the introduction. And by reading some, you know, author's work, it means I'm drawing passages from too, because there are some concepts in here with which I don't necessarily agree. But the best thing about this all, this is a discussion. And we are starting, we're just continuing discussions that have been going on and are necessary to continue. So in Bill McKibben's book, Deep Economy, speaking of this idea of sort of the lack of quality and the constant quest for more, he says, for most of human history, the two birds, more and better, roosted on the same branch. You could toss one stone and hope to hit them both. That's why the centuries since Adam Smith have been devoted to the dogged pursuit of maximum economic production. The idea that individuals pursuing their own individual interests in a market society make one another richer, and the idea that increasing efficiency, usually by increasing scale, is the key to increasing wealth, has indisputably produced more. It has built the unprecedented prosperity and ease that distinguish the lives of most of the people reading this book, read North America, well-educated, and other factors that we would point to. It is no wonder and no accident that they dominate our politics, our outlook, even our personalities. But the distinguishing feature of this moment is, and this is from 2006, this moment, being that better has flown a few trees over to make her nest. That changes everything. Now, if you've got the stone of your own life or your own society gripped in your hand, you have to choose between them. It's more or better. And so he goes into the, he goes into this throughout the book. One thing I wanted to make sure I did mention, though, was that he, to keep this very specific to North America and to the more privileged in North America, because there's such a disparity gap. And the first thing he says next is that when we look at other, we look at the disparity in America or, you know, many other countries around the world, more still is better. There still isn't enough. There isn't enough food. There isn't the water. There isn't enough. And so, you know, where we have way too much here, have far exceeded our needs and into a fairly wasteful economy and wasteful production itself that is impacting people around the world and creating the disparate conditions around the world in many ways. Not all. It's a very complex system, so I don't want to say that's the only factor, but we are a part of that. So he wants to make sure, and I want to make sure, that we understand that this is talking about this American economy itself, and those especially in the upper echelons of that. Donna, what do you know about the Eat Local Week then? And do you want to tell us a little more about the presentation you're giving Friday?
Well, the presentation I'm doing Friday is for the Palouse, the PFAC group, like that you mentioned earlier. And they are a group of many different organizations in town that are working on food and food-related issues here on the Palouse.
How long has the coalition been together?
I would say 3 years.
Okay. And was there, is a collective movement towards this, or was there someone who really spearheaded the effort?
Well, Cinda Williams and the University of Idaho Extension Agency was a part of the development of it. I would say, let's see, I graduated in 2011, so somewhere between 2011 and when I started my master's in 2012. And they came together to kind of survey what's going on with food and food systems. In order to see where do we have holes and gaps and how can we fill that.
And this is on the Palouse specifically, or is it specific to Moscow even?
No. It's specific to the Palouse. So it's our food shed.
Okay.
Which kind of follows a watershed. So when you're talking about food and maybe local miles, what this group has identified is more, not so much, you know, 50 miles, 100 miles, 250 miles, etc., but what is our food shed? And like I said, traditionally food sheds follow watersheds. So it's a Palouse Clearwater down to Grangeville.
Okay.
And Lewiston, Clarkston, Moscow, Pullman, the Palouse region itself.
Okay. And quite a bit of collaboration amongst the various entities then? I mean, do you feel this has been a pretty...
I do. It's open to the public. And so there are a lot of people that come that are in food-related either businesses or organizations. There's people that come up from Lewiston. There are local people who might be building a local kitchen, such as Nils Peterson, who has the Peterson Barn and Kitchen.
Oh, cool.
And so his interest would be how can he support the food systems through building this food kitchen that entrepreneurs, it's kind of a leap for people that have an idea. Say I have an idea, I want to locally sourced kombucha, but I need a commercial kitchen. And so I go over to Nils and I say, Nils, I have this idea. Can I come and tour your facility? Can we see if my idea and your facility will match each other? And then that way, you know, he has filled a need that we have here for another place to produce food.
Right. What an excellent example of how the larger structures, having a larger structure in place, mm-hmm. does facilitate the needs of both the individual and the community. That's excellent. I had not known where that had gotten. I know you've been a part of that, mm-hmm. and I had wanted to ask you about it, so I'm really glad you're explaining this now. So that's the mm-hmm. Palouse Clearwater Food Coalition, which meetings are open mm-hmm. to the public, and they're meeting this Friday, 11:30 to 1:30 at the 1912 Center. And Donna, tell me about, if you want to dive into it a little bit about Eat Local, Save Money, which is your presentation at noon that day.
Well, I will be presenting ways that people can, it's kind of obvious what we've been talking about, eat local and save money. And these have come from my specific experiences. You know, I'm a solo parent, and I've raised two kids by myself on a student income for the past 7 years almost that I've been living here. I've continued my massage business to augment type of things, but my budget is really low, and that's okay. I've got no problem with that, but I'm very crafty and resilient, and I will teach people, you know, the difference about when you're doing your own gardening. So that's one thing. Okay, you can grow your own food, right? Well, what food are you going to grow? Are you going to grow lettuce, which is, you know, a very inexpensive thing to go to the grocery store and buy, right? You can go to the co-op. You can go to any of the grocery stores. You can go down to the farmer's market. Lettuce is not going to be a budget breaker, right? So why are you growing something that you can buy inexpensively? Why are you not growing something that's more expensive in the stores? Like, oh, you should be growing things that are heavy in weight. So maybe your melons or potatoes, things that are really easy to grow around here. You know, you can do tomatoes. You want to grow at home the high dollar crops.
Okay.
And that's a pack of seeds. That costs, you know, $2 tops, depending on what kind of seeds that you're buying. So for $2, or I go and get a bag of seed potatoes that might cost me $5. In the end, I've got winter's worth of potatoes. I've got a winter's worth of squash. These things sell by the weight. Mm-hmm. So you either are going to grow something that sells by the weight that's going to cost you more money, or you're going to grow something that is high dollar, like peppers, tomatoes, strawberries, those type of things. And also, the other thing I talk about when we're growing our own is to grow perennials. Put things in that are going to come back. Herbs, berries, those type of things. So those will be some things I'll be suggesting on Friday.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So, and as an aside as well, I think perennials are always so interesting as well, because in our sort of domestication of things, and without even diving into the seed industry and all that is, and obviously you can buy great seed products, more, what is the term, not the ancestral seeds, but the...
Heirloom.
Mm-hmm. Heirloom seeds, many with genetic diversity, right, which is what we're losing in the seed base in general. Of course, some larger companies are attempting to annihilate altogether. Mm-hmm. But also, and I don't know if you want to speak to this, we can, but I just wanted to point out also the idea that with perennials as a whole, you are dealing with a plant species that is adapting to its local environment, which brings its own interesting elements into play, and really, I'm not sure what else I want to say about that specifically, but is another important factor, I think.
Right. Well, and that's another thing that I teach too, is wildcrafting. I am totally all about free food. Where can we get free food? You know, I go out with my friends every year and we harvest blackberries, we get elderberries, we get elderflowers, we make our own cough syrups, these type of things. I'm not a trained herbalist. I have a background in herbs, and I have learned a significant amount in my own private studies and going through massage school, and all of the things that the tools I've brought into my life to help with my clients and that and what have you, my own healing at home for my kids. So
and what you're talking about here too are not, we're not talking about arsenic or doled out poisons. We are talking about, and when you allude to grandmother knowledge and wisdom as well, these are the things that women through the generations have passed down, held on to the knowledge of, and they can be beneficial, right? So without putting any mm-hmm. major qualifiers, definitely can be beneficial, and I think both of us have found them to be extremely beneficial, while yet not providing a high level of risk as well. So you can grow your own tomatoes, you can grow your own peppers, you can harvest your own herbs, and all of this very safely, and which is, I think, interesting that I feel compelled to even say that on air.
Right.
But given today's climate, there has been that, and given some of the regulations that have come down, even in terms of the most basic herbs that are, you know, grown, that are growing wildly, that have been a long part of our interaction with nature, you know, there is this, it's a double-edged sword these days of safety concerns that I would call here light to the fact that we're not talking about. I can't even think of an example offhand, but you know, there are herbal medicines that you've got with shamans, with other things. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the most. So come back to that concept though, right at the beginning of the Hippocratic Oath of let medicine be thy healer. Can you?
Well, yeah, I can speak to it in my own personal experience. Well, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. Isn't it what we fuel our bodies with? Are we going to put awful junk filled gasoline in our cars? No, we spend more time on maintenancing our cars than we do our bodies. Mm-hmm. As a country, not individually, you know, lots of people are doing their own healing from home and taking responsibility for their health, you know, and I think that's a big part of it, is realizing that you are your best asset and advocate. Mm-hmm. And so what I do when I work with my clients is I'm a facilitator. I'm not I was going to say I'm not a healer, but that's not true. but I'm not here to fix you. I'm here to collaborate with you and to cooperate with you and to find the best way to forward in your own health and to reach whatever goals we've sat down and identified that's in your desire. So on that note, and kind of along the idea of what you were saying, you know, isn't it odd that we have to have a disclaimer about things that grow wild when 400 years ago, the people that lived here, it was intuitive to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going out and picking herbs that have dangerous effects on the body. I'm going and getting elderberries.
Right.
I'm making elderberry syrup out of elderberries and cinnamon and rose hips.
Your way of doing it sounds incredibly wonderful.
Yeah, well, and you know, and it's fun. And you go out and you grab a girlfriend and the kids and, you know, let them play along the river. We go down to Julietta and the river's there and the kids can play and we're picking blackberries. And then we have blackberry pie and et cetera, you know, blackberry smoothies, whatever it is that you want, you know. But there's so many cherry trees, apple trees, pear trees. There's so much free fruit around here. And actually that kind of ties into what the co-op movie is going to be on about the waste, wastefulness of our food system, especially here in the United States and other countries in the UK and everywhere. We don't want to eat ugly fruit, right? We don't want to eat ugly food. We don't want to eat ugly vegetables. But what is wrong if this carrot looks like an S instead of like a spike, you know?
Right.
The apples that I choose to pick off of the side of the road don't look like the apples in Rosars right now, but they're actually even more tasty, less pesticides, and in my opinion, are more nutritious. So I am feeding my body with this medicine.
Right. It's a lot like real women.
Well, I like that concept. Are there fake women? Are there fake women?
No, you know, that's not fair to say either, but hyper need to keep things so young, which is our last discussion about menopause, in fact, was great in coming back and not valuing, you know, all of our age, all of our wisdom, all of the so-called flaws, which of course we think are the juiciest parts of it all. Yeah. And so very akin to the same foods. I mean, it's just I know it's been written to, and I'd love to have something here to share with that, but really just that idea of a sense of an opulence that could even ask for that.
Yeah.
Type of so-called perfection, which you know, is not even a word I would choose to use, because like you say, the best tasting is straight out of good earth in whatever shape and form it comes in, and so that's great. So this movie is gonna focus on that as well, and I think, you know, I love what you're doing in saying, in acknowledging you can eat this way, that you can actually bring that density of nutrition and nourishment back into your body, and that you know, there's always a lot of discussion about the organic movement being out of people's reach. And so, and in ways, of course, in ways it is. And in, if we go outside of Moscow and you look at inner city dynamics and other things that are going on around the country, thankfully, and we're not going to focus on that as much, but I mean, with just with a nod to the fact that there are movements around the country to make sure that everyone has access to this. And that's part of even an environmental justice movement as part of an ethical movement towards making sure all human beings. So I love that you can flip it on its head as well in terms of being here. And I'm wondering if there's any listeners out there that when they hear, oh, I love free food, if there's an immediate judgment on that, because I've seen that in others when someone says, oh, free food, there's these notions of, well, nobody gets anything for free. Oh, that's just, you know, mooching off the system, things like that. And so I'd love it maybe if you, you know, you talked about food, not lawns at one point, or I think that's something you alluded to earlier we might not have spoken of today. Do you want to talk more about that concept a little bit here?
I do. Actually, I'm kind of insulted when people say, you know, oh, that's mooching off of the system. It's like, when did it become that? If we go back to 1900, where was our system at that time? We were helping each other. We were collaborating. We had neighborhoods and communities what happened to the old fashioned barn raising, you know? And it's a balance between what you said earlier about going backwards into places that might strip us of the things that women have fought for so long, just the equality, just a level of equality that's not subjugation, that doesn't own any of that. But there is so much back. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's so much back there, knowledge and wisdom that we can apply today to add quality to our life.
Absolutely.
And so...
Absolutely. And so when it, and we'll come back to the food, not lawns, but really within that though, I think that's such an important, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And then looking at the fact that it was an entire, way of being that was diminished. And so, and that's what, the women's rights movement and the human rights movement have moved out of is that kind of oppressive essentialism. But in all of that, in having to move out of that, many people, I think you might be suggesting, but I'll definitely comment that many people then have been taught to devalue, right, those very things that they were once associated with, which, so when you can reclaim that power, choose to, man, woman, doesn't matter, reclaiming that wisdom, giving value to that again, that's really what we're talking about. Don't worry, we have a little buzzing off and on, but this is... Come on, folks, we're coming at you live from KRP Moscow. This is how it goes. This is the beauty of radio, right? We're right here, right now, very present. What happens, happens, and we'll say is meant to be. And I'm so happy you're here. It's a lot of fun to come in here and play some music on your own, but nothing like having an incredible woman sitting here with you.
Oh, thank you.
So, So we'll bring that back in then. I mean, if we're talking, so that all goes together, right? This notion you're talking about of this, if we don't over-essentialize it, if we look at the value positive elements of that, that was a past you just spoke to of community, of working together, of, I mean, there was such abundance on the land previously and nobody called that mooching off the land. You know, we might have in other ways ultimately exploited it with agricultural technology, but, you know, the notion that and around the country, the way in which people are planting food on their front lawns as opposed to lawns. I look at this campus. The first thing I thought when I came onto the UI campus was, this is amazingly gorgeous. And the second thing I thought was, how cool it would be if every other tree was a fruit tree we could eat from. And if most of this were garden spaces that we could pick from, and if we had some more native species here that we could, that have that perennial element that are continually adapting, that we can craft from as well. And it's, you know, all this acreage just waiting for, and all these students needing to be fed.
Can you imagine walking through the public spaces on the university and just pulling raspberries as you're going from one class to the other instead of walking across the lawn?
I totally can, and I want it.
Me too. I come back.
Right?
I come back and finish my master's.
The University of Idaho really needs to attract, right? Well, and actually it's pretty relevant you know, because I am going back to school here, and in speaking with some of the other students that are coming back, and especially those coming from city areas, you know, one of the things I've wanted to do is really let them know what is available to them in this area in terms of, you know, a part of my study is in eco-critical theory. And so instead of just theoretical, grounding people into our Palouse bioregion and the wealth of food that is here, just the farmer's market alone being such a hub, right? And such, I've actually never seen in the U.S. anyway, a market as nice and complete as ours. And as one student put it, you know, with real things that you really need to nourish, right? The crafts, the arts, all of that is, you know, very important and very relevant. But in many other markets and some city markets too, where maybe more focus is on the next newest product and not the edibles.
Right.
So
can I share a few things?
Please do.
So a couple things came to mind when you were speaking about that. Specifically to the Palouse, you know, people look around and they say, oh, what are we going to eat? Lentils and our garbanzo beans and wheat the entire time. What else do we have here? So in my studies, you know, I have a friend of mine who is a chef, and she has recently went to Italy and then came back. And I would call her a Renaissance woman, but she's a cook chef. She, you know, she doesn't work in a restaurant here, but anyways, she came back and she says, you know, Donna, the Tuscany, the way of cooking in Tuscany is very peasant like. It's very much lentils. It's very similar in Tuscany to it is in here in the Palouse. So there's lots of lentils. There's lots of garbanzos. They make these beautiful stews, but what they're doing is they're adding the depth of these, you know, onions, and they're adding the depth of tomatoes that they have there that are ripened in the Tuscan sun, and the peppers. And so, you know, you think, oh, what am I going to make with garbanzos? I'm going to make this hummus again. One more time. I'm sick of hummus. And anybody can make that. And when you learn from each other, one of the things I would like to do is to start a community kitchen and then bring in a farmer and then say, okay, this is what this farmer grows, and let's make together, let's talk about how he grows it or she grows it, how they grow, how they're raising their food, and what values are behind that, and then how that imbibes the food that we're eating. You know, I don't know if imbibes is the right word, but you know, how it fills the food. When you are growing something that you love, it comes out. When you're cooking something that you love, it comes out. When I'm doing massage and in the midst of the energy of the healing that I love, people can feel that. And so it's really kind of opening your mind and learning new ways to cook the things that we have, that not getting in a rut of the same old type of thing that keeps getting put out in every single cookbook.
Right. And a couple of things just to emphasize you're bringing up such important points. Mm-hmm. And that idea of the energy of the food itself, there is nothing new age about that. And I think anyone who has had the opportunity to taste that difference. So there, I agree, there's a thinking about, and then there's that it requires the experience of, right? Of really diving into life, which means you dive into those foods, and invariably people find that difference. When I, depending on what I'm cooking, my own boys will say, you know, it's all it takes is going to, say, Affinity Farms and getting the good stuff. I'm making the same dinner I made yesterday, and today it is 1,000 times better. I have told the boys nothing about it. Mm-hmm. They don't know why, mm-hmm. but it makes all the difference. So that, and the idea, again, also being able to share those ideas, mm-hmm. being able to expand upon that, being able to take what sometimes we call simplicity, but just the mm-hmm. basic goodness, right, of our goods. And then also the fact that staple products, those staple carbs have always been a part. Well, I'm going to try and stay away from those big qualifiers. Have been a part of human society, an important part of human societies for a long time. And so there have always been some starchy carbohydrate style roots or something along those lines that are our staple. And so one of the questions that came up earlier today in this conference I was at had to do with our expectations also of certain types of comforts, of getting too used to, right? Always the new, the better, the faster. Everything we talked about in the deep economy reading, you know. So that you're highlighting these points is super important. And then that you are making them very present. This is not just a theoretical idea of what we could do. this is happening here now, and this is, and there's a forum for you to continue working with these ideas and for the ideas that others have.
Agreed.
Awesome. Okay. So, let's look here. What else?
Do you want me to share my tool? Do you want me to share my buy local tool?
Yes, please.
Okay. So this is what I tell people when they say it's too expensive to buy local here. One thing I say, well, you get what you pay for. So let's talk about the externalities of the conventional food system. So we have environmental effects in our soil. We're killing our soil with the pesticides that we're putting in there. I'll get to the tool in 1 second. This is kind of a lead in to my tool. So we have these externalities. We have food-based health care costs that are skyrocketing. Food-based illnesses kill more people than any other disease or accident, what have you, in this country. And so we have to look at the root problems. You know, we have to look at our food roots. No pun intended. Maybe all pun intended. But we have to look at where our values are. Okay, so for me, food is an important part of my budget. So I will spend more money on my food than my clothes. I will go and buy clothes at the secondhand store because they're not my value. My value is how I am fueling myself.
You're listening to KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is 90.3. Thanks so much for being here. I'm with Donna Mills, and we're going to have her continue talking about the value.
So really, yeah, it's you know, I think that our society is, you know, people say, oh, well, that's not the way it is. And people are never going to buy into your theories. And I said, well, wait a second. Everybody that I know has similar theories to mine. It might not be spot on, but we are all looking and seeking quality of life. We have realized that the way our society and our media and our government has pushed us into this very separate individualism, the United States of individuals, not the United States of American people, North American people. We're in competition with each other. I'm going to go to my job and I'm going to make a ton of money so I can buy X, Y, and Z toys. And look at me. I've put all of my values into my toys and my job. And yet, really, the value that we should be cultivating is our interpersonal connections and our interpersonal relationships and saying, hey, Tara, what's going on this evening? Let's go take the kids out to the park and sit and chat and have these relationships with each other.
Right. And I think just to, as a clarification on that too, because in the should, I think your should do those things is coming out of the fact of, as you mentioned earlier, people are feeling empty. We are feeling empty in the empty materialism.
Right.
And so that should is like not just the people you know, but people around. Yes, you have a good handful to show that by experience. Mm-hmm. I do as well. And then around this country, you know, that's part of that entire movement back into is that feeling of emptiness and disconnection that is leading people back to one another.
Right. We crave authenticity. We crave intimacy. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that we don't have. We've lost intimacy. And
talk to me about that some more. These are intimacy, not as much, but because it ties in so importantly. Yeah. Authenticity has become almost a catchphrase now that you'll hear, you know, like everything great. It goes to unfortunate marketing at times, but authenticity nonetheless is an excellent word and concept. Can you keep going on that train?
Yeah, it's my favorite word. Okay. I love it. It's just a depth. It's really the commitment to show up and to be real and to crack your heart open and to say, look, I crave intimacy in my interpersonal relationships. In order to do that, you have to be vulnerable, and people are not super comfortable being vulnerable. But I think that the people are coming around and seeing that this is necessary. I want to show you my heart, Tara, and I want you to see it. And I want to see yours. I want to see what makes you tick. This is where the authenticity comes from, when we share ourselves with each other, when we care for each other, when we lift each other up. You know, we're all, you know, there's been decades of struggle here in our country and globally, and it's about time that it shifted. And it is shifting, and it's shifting because people are connecting. People are holding hands over the internet. People are holding hands in person. They're holding hands at the market and saying, I value you. I see you. You are important. And in that, we are taking that beyond just our interpersonal relationships, and we're spreading it out to other parts of our lives. So, for instance, our food or our consumer choices, we have such mighty power in our spending. Like, for me, every dollar that goes out of my wallet is a vote for the kind of society that I want to have. And that's what I teach people. So that's the overall umbrella of why do I want to teach you how to sew, or why do I want to teach you how to like hem a pair of pants, or how to can some tomatoes or make some applesauce, because I want to see you. I want you to see me. I want us to connect in something that's got depth to it, you know?
That could be the most beautiful dialogue I've heard in a long time.
You don't want me to go off, because we could be here for hours.
I love when you go off. In fact, I would like you to go off more. And I think this is what we all need. And talk about authenticity, right. Donna. I mean, you are absolutely, to me, you know, as a friend over the years and as a person I've witnessed in various roles, you know, always authentic. And interesting to me, too, that even in talking about that and how many people might use that as a catchphrase, just how uncomfortable it often does make people to face their own selves, there's an attraction, I think, to being with someone who's authentic, while also sometimes a bit of a repulsion's not the right word, I don't think, but actually just a little bit of keeping one's space, because we've learned how not to be in that proximity and the discomfort of that, not being, I mean, concepts, all these concepts come up, right? Not being in control. If you're authentic and here in the moment, then you're not necessarily in control of what comes next. All these things we've built, you know, a nation on, an economy on, a food system upon, which I don't know if you want to speak to that at all, but that does bring up other interesting concepts as well. I think you have something else you wanted to speak to here. So let's go where you're...
No, I was just following along that line. Mm-hmm. When you said it makes people uncomfortable, it's true. I've spoken to my parents about this, and years ago, they didn't want to hear it because it creates cognitive dissonance. So if I say every time you go to XYZ grocery store and you buy something from Kellogg's, or you buy something in a box or a can or something like that, you are just supporting the system that you sit down and watch news and moan and complain about, right? So don't you see what your choices are doing and how your actions are feeding something that you're really upset with? So, in that, there's no reason to throw blame. Like, I have my lifestyle, and I have had people say, oh, well, you know, you might have it all together. I don't. but okay, so you're going to go to the co-op and you're going to buy this, or you're going to go down to the farmer's market and you're going to buy that. And how elitist is that? And I'm like, really? Because I live on about less than $1,000 a month. There's nothing elitist about my lifestyle at all. But it makes people uncomfortable because they're not reaching for that authenticity.
Let's pause there for a minute, because I don't think people really see that, because it's become such a kitschy thing and all these other parts. Like, I don't know that people really realize you can live this way, and that it is, just to reemphasize what you are saying, it is about making these conscious choices,
right,
to put your money into where your values are, and then taking that hard step of evaluating what your values are and what you're supporting as a result of what you're doing. And that none of that is elitist. That is absolutely human and absolutely everyone's right to be doing. And hopefully that, you know, I think you and I both still feel fortunate that we're in this place, that even living at the lower end of the spectrum, we still have options like this.
I say financial spectrum because I think we have so much more wealth.
Thank you. Yeah.
So yes, we'll throw that spectrum in there.
Excellent.
That's right.
Right. Wealth and abundance.
Wait a second.
Absolutely.
I'm vibrating. I'm radiating at the top of the spectrum. That is quality and authenticity. There's that word.
Yes.
I hope that doesn't become a catchphrase, because I really like that word. Yep. But you know, the thing is like, when people aren't there, you don't slam them.
No, absolutely,
you know,
not.
You don't. Right. You lift them up and you say, oh, I'm really sorry that you see the values that I'm choosing as an elitist thing. I mean, I'm just going to use that word because I've heard it before. Mm. And actually, this is the way I see it. I see it as connection. I see it as integrating myself into the community. I see it as being a part of the web. You know, we all have inherent worth and dignity. We are all part of this interdependent web. We all hold hands and belong together to this community. And you don't raise a child and then have them trip over something that they don't know and then slam them for that. You lift them up and you say, oh, come on, hun, let me show you this way. And so, you know, in my business, I want to teach people that want to learn, and I'm not going to degrade them for things they don't know. When you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. And if you're seeking, that's the best place to be, because imagine all the things that you get to learn. There's no point in trying to reach perfection in this life, because for me, if you reach perfection, then there's no growth. What else? There's nowhere to go after perfection. So, and I want to be a lifelong learner.
Excellent. Lifelong learners rock.
Yeah, we do.
And the notion of perfection, of course, in all its fallacy to begin with. And I mean, who knows? But what if this universe just keeps loving learning about itself? There's been nothing static from the get-go, obviously. And so there's this constant need to revise. And all of that is being here and being now and being part of what is. And so having this connection mm-hmm. to your community, we've primarily been talking about, and through food. So interesting, maybe we can come back a little bit more to some of the other concepts surrounding that, and perhaps nature and the environment as well, as how that plays in. We're going to take a little musical break here for a moment, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes visiting with Donna Mills. I am here today with Donna Mills, and we've been talking about local food sources, ways of being a part of your local food, ways of nourishing yourself, and all of this, trying to bridge it a little bit within the context of our global economy and our global connection to people, and you know, and we all know how tied together things are, and there have been some events recently that have been, you know, pretty horrific on a world scale, and so it can be easy to lose touch with what you can do, with how you can be here and now, and how you can find value in life. And this is one of the fundamental ways through our food choices and food systems. So again, here with Donna Mills, and we've been looking at some of her methods of teaching people in Moscow, ways of coming back to knowledge that we once had, more so as communities and as a society. And she's been mentioning this tool that a person can use in terms of food purchasing. And I would like to turn the mic back over to Donna so she can dive into that for us.
Okay. Well, this is a concept that I came up with when I was thinking about the fact that on average, our food travels 1,500 miles. So I started thinking, okay, well, what can I do about that? And in addition, people saying, well, you can't get everything local. Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. Both of those are absolutely true. Our food is traveling too far, and it's being harvested too early without the nutrients and nutrition that it can offer us. And we cannot get everything local. Okay. So this is what I've done. I have identified what would I call local. Is that 100 miles? Is that 250 miles? Is it 50 miles? Is it our food shed? You have to make that choice for yourself. What I've done is I've taken 100% of my food dollars. Say I have, just for easy math, say I have $100, okay? And I'm going to spend how much of that within this local food shed? So I'm just going to say 100 to 250 miles. You got to identify that yourself. I can get 60% of what I need, or $60 of my $100. I can spend here on the Palouse in our food shed. So now I voted with 60% of my food dollars for my local farmers, for my local ranchers, for my local dairies. I can get as much meat and dairy products and vegetables as I would like here. Can I get coconut oil or coffee or tea? No, I can't. Can I get fish? Well, maybe down from in the valley I could, but beyond that, you expand your miles now. So I'm going to go from the 100 and 252 out to 500, right? So I've got 500 miles. That's going to take me out to the edge of Washington, into Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Canada. So now what I've done, how much can I get within that space? Can I get another 20% of my food purchases within that. If I can do that, that gives me 80% of my food that I purchase within 500 miles. So now I've decreased my food purchases by 2/3, right? So remember, it's 1500 miles that food travels on average. I've now identified 80% of the food that I can buy within 500 miles. So that doesn't include citrus. We don't grow a lot of citrus up here, right? So I like to have a gin and tonic, and I need a lime in my gin and tonic, right? Or I want some orange juice, what have you, lemon, et cetera. So I'll take the out of my 80%, I've got 20% left. So I'm going to take another 10%, and I'm going to buy maybe pecans or things that we don't get here in the Pacific Northwest. I'll spend another 10% in the nation. So I'll buy things from Florida, I'll buy things from the South, or, you know, the get some lobster from Maine or whatever it is. I'm not going to eat that all the time. Those are things I'm only going to buy that I'm going to use at a small measurement, right? I'm not going to use those every day. My 10% purchases I'm going to make for the rest of the nation is going to be pretty small in the context of the food that I buy. So that leaves me another 10% that I have left out of my 100% of my food budget, and I'm going to spend that globally. I am going to buy coconut oil. I am going to buy spices. I am going to buy tea and coffee and chocolate, those things that we can't get here. But again, those are not going to be a major part of my diet as much as the things that I'm going to spend here in the Pacific Northwest.
And do you, where you can then, budget allowing, look for the fair trade elements in the different parts then when you're looking internationally?
Absolutely. I want to be a global citizen. I want to be a local citizen, and I want to be a global citizen. And yes, that was the next point I was going to make, is that when you decide to buy globally from other countries, make sure that it's getting fair trade. Make sure that you're not supporting inappropriate human abuses in the things that you're consuming. So,
and for the most part, in your experience, I mean, I'm really reconsidering back to some of the research I've done on it. Mm-hmm. For the most part, it has always seemed to me that within the fair trade movement, there really is an adherence to the principles put forth. So people worry about things being a scam. Well, I put my money here. It turned out in the end, they were just as exploitive as anything. Mm-hmm. Have you found that to be the case in your studies and experience?
In the companies that I research, I have not found it to be the case that they are, that I'm being duped.
Right.
You know, I am, you know, for example, there is a company out of Africa. I don't know if it's a company or an organization called Alafia, and they do shea butter. And this is a women's own company. Mm-hmm. And they go into countries in Africa, women who are doing this in the old grandmother tradition. They're producing what they're producing out of years and years and years of traditional methods, right? And so then they are taking the money that they make, and they are creating small businesses for themselves in their own communities. And they are, you know, turning this money around. It's going from one, I like the product. Mm-hmm. I want to support the work that they're doing. I want to support their own sustainability. You know, that's the whole thing. It's like, we can be as sustainable as we want on the pollutes, but if we're not doing things that reach out into the community and, in, you know, take our sustainability light, as it may be, and allow somebody else to shine theirs, then we're really not as sustainable as we think we are.
Your message is so wonderfully clear and bright. And I love that. And I love just how concrete you've made this in terms of breaking down the percentages. Mm-hmm. Because for one thing, it makes it doable. You know, it actually makes it doable. And as someone who's been doing this on a very limited budget, it makes it doable mm-hmm. for more than just a select few. And then you also have that when it comes down to the things that will cost more, and for good reason, and that supports mm-hmm. this infrastructure you're talking about around the globe, it's not that you're spending 100% of the budget, you know, you're into these smaller increments now. And then in terms of, because another factor that comes up there that is difficult, you know, we're all living busy lives. And even as we try to remove ourselves from that treadmill, that can be very difficult. And so at least what I found, part of being local as well, is in getting to know. So not just in the relationships created, but in getting to know your farmers and the food sources. Again, part of your research then remains, there's a continuity in that. I know then that when I go to the market, when I go here, when I buy from so-and-so, that I can trust what I'm getting, that it comes from a good source on all sorts of ethical levels and measures and values that you've talked about. And that even if this is, you know, this is something perhaps many want to aim for, right? But that in any level, you can take your own percentage of this, like you've already alluded to, and start making a foray into this way of voting with your money, which, you know, such a great way to say it, because I think every, you know, there's this idea that we have to recreate new perceptions every new generation and a few times around. On some level, we're never saying anything new, but we have to frame it in ways that make sense, and getting out of the idea of boycotting, which actually had such a negative sense to it, and just voting with your money.
Right. You create what you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, these percentages are what I've come up with.
Right.
You can flex those as you need to. I have been studying food and food systems since a year before I moved up here in 2008. So 2007, you know, when I went through that nutrition program and they said, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food, the light went on. And I said, okay, all right, well, let's go down this path, you know, and I've completely immersed myself in it and I'm passionate about it and it makes me happy. And, so I continue to walk down this path. There are so many things in our world that we can change for the positive, that we can shift. There's so much work to be done. It's like, I believe it was Mother Teresa that says, we don't have any time to sit down and moan and complain about things. There's too much work to be done.
Right.
Right. And I just absolutely love her. I love her spirit and I love her. Like, I don't need drama. I don't need high recognition. I don't need fanfare. I just need to do some good work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what I want to do, is just to do some good work and to, in that, let it radiate out to other people, you know, just be a sun, be, let my beam touch your beam and your beam can touch somebody else's beam and share the wealth.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing that, when you were talking just a few minutes ago, that came into my head about food and people speaking to how expensive it can be and how expensive, not that it can be, it is expensive. So there's two things I'd like to say. One, in conventional food, we are not paying the true cost of what it takes to raise that. The farmers who are raising this food conventionally are not getting paid the money that they deserve. So you're going to go down to the farmer's market and maybe you might find X piece of produce for $3 a pound. And you can go into the grocery store and you can find the same piece of produce grown by somebody else in Georgia for $0.79 a pound, or maybe it's $1.50, maybe it's only half or something like that. That person did not get paid what it cost them to raise that, you know. And so when you find that food that's at the farmer's market and it's more local, is more expensive, it's because these farmers value what they're giving to you and they're not gutting you for prices. That's not happening. What they're doing is paying their rent and they're paying their house payments and they're paying for the seeds that are taking, you know, to grow this good food for you. It is jam packed. So you can think about going to the grocery store and buying this $1.50 pound XYZ piece of fruit, or you can come down here and buy it for $3 and know that, guess what? I don't have to go to the grocery store and buy all of this food that really doesn't nourish me and then go and buy vitamins because the food that I'm eating isn't nourishing me, nor do I have to pay the high cost of healthcare that's going to come along with eating insufficiently nutritive food.
Absolutely.
If that's a word.
That word works perfectly for
making
me.
It up as I go along.
Well, that, I mean, just on every level, then the value on every level, and including, and maybe you can speak more to this than I can, but the continual renourishment of the soils, and instead of the depletion and the stripping that we're doing, which is its own cost, obviously. And you've already alluded to the fact of how, you know, then you need to go buy your vitamins to account for the fact that there was no nutritional value in what you just ate. So you spent less, you got less.
Exactly.
And in the end, we maybe cost the earth quite a bit more as well because of that depletion, wherein with the organic model and other mm-hmm. sustainable models, that continual renewal of nutrients into the soil and what that does, so that when you, on top of that, when you're supporting it, other hidden costs then are also the fact that you're not stripping, right?
Right.
So however, we have never managed, really, insofar as I know, maybe there is some mm-hmm. kind of way they're trying to put a dollar value on that. but without being able to completely do that, just that concept alone that we would re-nourish as opposed to strip the land, is, to me, has been another huge concept, and also goes right into what you gain from the food that you're eating, and that entire exchange. Like you said, this is continues to be an exchange. You are with us here at KRFP Moscow Pullman, and this is Yin Radio. My name is Tara Howe, and my guest today has been Donna Mills, an absolutely, absolutely amazing woman that I am so glad to have on the air and to have her wisdom coming out to you. So we've been talking about soils, and I'm going to just give the mic back over to Donna.
Well, quite frankly, our current agricultural system that we grow food under right now is not supporting our soils, as you mentioned earlier before the break. And that's a foundation of our food. And so not only are we losing our foundation, but we are also in the midst of destroying all of our pollinators who are necessary for the majority of food that we eat. So without these pollinators, without this healthy soil, we're going to be left with a very small percentage of food that we're used to eating. And that's the end-all, be-all, get-all. So we have no choice but to shift our paradigm, but to shift to our values. You know, I think that people, it's important that we look at what we have and we set aside our egos for bigger, better, more. Adam Smith had it completely wrong, completely wrong. What Bill McKibben is saying, you know, is that quality, you know, more is not necessarily better, and that we have to redefine. We're being forced to redefine quality over quantity.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out so clearly. I love all of today, really, how Donna has brought back in this information, I think, in a way that it makes sense. It stays out of some of the theory that has no application. And she is talking about things you can do here now and reasons to be doing those, hopefully providing some hope for the ability to do those things. I know that similar to what Donna mentioned, we all have those revelatory points in our lives where we realize how interconnected we are and how interconnected different systems are at different times. We might feel interconnected on one level and not even realize something we've been absolutely bypassing. Most often it is in ignorance and disconnection rather than, I mean, most people I know are not out there to harm others. And it's virtually impossible to turn back once you realize what you are doing is so harmful. And you mentioned a great term earlier about the cognitive dissonance. This is a huge part, you know, of what goes on in our country as a whole. And anywhere, cognitive dissonance is a human reality when you're faced with information that you can't process because it puts into challenge everything you've known, or at least large parts of what you've known. And change is difficult, but as you're suggesting, there is that imperative to change. And that complacency, as you've mentioned, is not an option right now. So come back, one concept that we might dive into within all that then, because you've given us such good tools already to start coming back into our local food systems and to being here now. You talk about, you know, family dinner, recreating value in our everyday lives. Do you want to?
I do. So during my studies at the university, I went to New York and I went to a TED talk, TEDx Manhattan, and it was entitled Changing the Way We Eat. It was the very first one that they had put out, and they've 2011, they've put one out every year since then. And Lori David, who was actually the producer of An Inconvenient Truth and who worked with Al Gore, was there, and she was speaking on this idea of the family dinner and how she and she's married to Larry David, one of the big TV producers of like Seinfeld, etc. And she was talking about this family dinner and how her two girls were becoming teens and how she really wanted to stay connected to them in this very vulnerable time of their lives. So they're reaching out for their own individuality and their own independence, and they still need to turn around and check back in with mom and dad. And feel that, yes, I can leap out of my family dynamics into adulthood in a safe space, because I can turn around and see that my family's still there. And one of the things that she identified was the most important and the most integral tool that she used to stay connected to her girls was the family dinner. That they began to sit down at 6 o'clock, whatever, make up your own time, whatever works for you. If it's 10 o'clock at night and more European type of family dinner, at least just bring everybody to the dinner. The television goes off, the phones go away, they don't even come to the dinner table, and you sit and you chat. And it's not a conversation of how was your day. It is, how was your day? Fine. You know, no. What made you smile today? You know, what was a stroke of genius that you saw today? What made you shine? What upset you? You know, so pulling conversations out of how was your day and moving beyond the one word concept of fine. Typical teenage, fine, what'd you do today? Nothing. You know, that type of stuff. And dinner is a place that you can do that. You know, there's many different places that we can glean things out, information from our children. You know, there's the typical father and son sitting there fishing off the deck, you know, and basically they're just fishing. But if eventually you become immersed in this philosophical conversation with this child who's their own person, who you're exploring, who you're getting to know. And so, yeah, there's the dock and the fishing, and there's also the table and dinner. And you get kids in there helping you. This is not a mom is going to go in and cook dinner. We're going to do this together. You know, I have my daughter cooking with me all the time. I bought her own set of knives this past year because she's 10 and she's got a sheath on and it's all safe and everything. But, you know, I noticed her using my knives and they were too big. My 10, 12 inch chef knives and butcher knives are too big. I went and bought 6-inch knives for her. So she has the tools she needs to create with me. And she has that creative force inside of her. And so I want to know her. I want to surround her with my love and guidance. And having her at the table and having her in the kitchen with me is not only teaching those skills to her, but she also gets to know her mom.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. I love that. I love the whole dynamic you've just created there and the abundance on every single level that comes.
Abundance. Indeed.
Absolutely. Indeed. Which is interesting, again, because coming back to everything we've talked about and the more we recognize not being mm-hmm. better and the value in things, but not forgetting abundance, not forgetting what it feels like to be fed with nourishment, fed with love, fed on every level. And that abundance really, I think, you know, applies more to that than it applies on all levels, but it embodies.
Right. And gratitude.
And gratitude
for connection.
Yes.
Gratitude for gratitude for just having open eyes and open hearts and being able to look around outside of what the media feeds us mm-hmm. and see that there's more.
Absolutely.
There's more. And within that more, it's like looking at a black and white television and being fed the very narrow view that our media, driven by our government and corporations, want to feed us. There's full technicolor out there. It's not a black and white world, you know. And one thing I wanted to mention about the idea, like tying this into Yin Radio and tying this into womanhood and femininity, is that I don't like to go back. Like, I don't feel like what I'm doing is going back. I feel like it's coming full circle. This is a goddess movement. This is not an anti-feminist. This going into the kitchen for me is where I'm my best, you know. And I think that women and men need to identify, what is it that you're passionate about? What comes naturally? What is it that you bring to this world? Where's your spark and your joy and your light? And what do you add to this system that's so amazing and beautiful? And do that. I don't care if it's a woman who's a motorcycle mechanic and a man who teaches ballet in New York. I don't care what your gender is or what your job is. Just name it and claim it and shine it.
I love that. Absolutely love that. Thank you so much. And yes, and it is that. And within that, then wherever we fit, continuing not to devalue this critically important space that was once only associated with women's work. Mm-hmm. And now we can see much more broadly, and yet not forgetting the importance of all the things that you've spoken to today, the critical importance of that. Let me see if I can thread back this other thought that had come through there. Well, may have lost that one, but the critical, well, I know the thought was exactly that because your love and your artistry actually in the kitchen, right, mm-hmm. is phenomenal. And I have very much enjoyed partners whose love and art has been in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And part of my joy is in the other parts of it, is actually in making selections in food, mm-hmm. right? And in some of the other ends of it, in teaching my children, who actually turn out to be quite a bit more of the artistic bent coming from food, right, mm-hmm. than I am, and that we come together and share. So we are each bringing in and drawing from our strengths and mm-hmm. enjoying that. And so I have no less respect for it, even if it's not my art and passion to be in there to the extent that, that you are, that some other people I know are. Mm-hmm. None of that is in the devaluation of it. And mm-hmm. again, coming back to the full relational element, and I know this will sound so cliche, but, you know, I love to do dishes after people mm-hmm. cook for me. I don't love dishes in general. Yeah. They're a necessary yeah. part of life, and I love that we take care of
just
things.
Just had that conversation right? today with my daughter. The whole dishes thing.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, it's a beautiful, it's like sweeping your... sweeping your steps. There are just some things that are part of the mundane part of life maintenance that is the beauty of life, right? It's not all these epic so-called moments. Those moments actually can be quite epic, mm-hmm. but it's the interspersal of all that. And mm-hmm. so even in that, then I am quite happy doing dishes after all that and giving back and entering into those relationships. So let's see, we are coming up to the end of our program here. One thing I want to make sure not to forget is to give you Donna's information here. So, again, she is going to be speaking this Friday at the 1912 Center at noon. And the name of your talk again?
Eat local, save money.
I love it. And so you can find her there. And that is a great way to be introduced to some of her work and to Donna herself, who just no doubt can, you'll find from her that everything she speaks to is everything she embodies. And so talk about authenticity. There's your first lesson in authenticity, the word I can't spit out. You know, she embodies everything she's saying here. So if you wanted to schedule a consultation with Donna, you can reach her at 208-310-2224. You can also find her at Rowantree Community Enrichment Courses .wordpress.com, which from a marketing perspective we're gonna have to work on, so it could just be goddesswonder.com. But if you Rowan is Rowan, let me say that one more time, Rowan. If you look up Rowantree Community Enrichment Courses in Moscow, Idaho, or in affiliation with WordPress, you should be able to find that. But again, let me give you her phone number, 208-310-2224. And you can find her this Friday speaking at the 1912 Center. Donna, any final comments, statements that you want to make?
Don't be afraid to look outside of the black and white. Okay. And it's kind of simple, but really it's we're shifting. And so we either get on the train to more collaborative, cooperative, amazing interpersonal connections in our community, or we're going to fight it. It's going to shift anyway, so you might as well go with it, right?
Right.
I believe in this change, and I see it coming in more so. I feel it mm-hmm. coming, and food is just one way to do it. There's lots of other ways to do it. People are doing it in ministry. We're doing it in our classrooms. We're shifting the way that we engage with people, and there's nothing wrong with kindness. We could use a lot more kindness, you know, and a lot more authenticity, and that's, you know... And as a real short, one of the things that I talk about with a friend of mine who is atheist, not to get into religion, but who has had people say, oh, you don't believe in anything. And she says, yes, I do. I believe in caring for people. We need to care for each other. And wherever you are, there's not a darn bit of harm in connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that, because mm-hmm. there is that in the... trend, or sometimes this falling into pessimism, you know, it's a tough time. There's a lot to contend with. There are a lot of layers. We can't do it all individually. It has to be community level, has to be global. And so it can be way too easy to get lost in that and to throw up your arms and say, I can't do anything. And, well, we might as well be miserable then. Of course, we're here now. That's all we've ever had. You know, we could be doing everything, quote unquote, right. And, you know, the next asteroid hits tomorrow. And I mean, where are you in the meantime? If you're living from a space of that authenticity and joy and we're creating this beautiful, all we know right now is that's what we've got. So whether you believe this can help down the road or not, which I know both of us do believe it can help, either way, what state of living would you rather be in? And you've spoken to other ways in which then, not only in making these choices, but then in the food itself, I think the way that enriches your quality of life as a whole, so your day-to-day living is better as a result. Feeling better, boy, doesn't make anything worse, that's for sure. I'm going to share, actually on those lines, a little quote by Wendell Berry in Life is a Miracle. He says, good forms confer health upon the things they gather together. Forms, families, and communities are forms of art, just as poems, paintings, and symphonies. None of these things would exist if we did not make them. We can make them well, or we can make them poorly. Choice is another thing that we make. And so I think that sums up what we have been speaking to here today. Donna Mills runs Rowan Tree Community Enrichment courses and is talking about new basics, and I'm messing up because she has so many wonderful names. Let me just have Donna tell you once more about who she is and where to find her, and then we'll sign off in a minute from Yin Radio.
I've been struggling with those names as well. I'm trying to condense. No, it's okay. I'm really just trying to condense what it is that I do into one thing, and I haven't really gotten there yet. So just hang in there with me. I'll work it out. I like this idea of true north, like finding your true north. So I'm working with that right now. The names may be changing. But in the meantime, my daughter, named after my daughter Rowan, and the tree of life, which is the Rowan tree, the mountain ash. My business is Rowan Tree Community Enrichment Courses, trying to offer education that enriches our community. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter. Well, no, you can't find me on Twitter because I have a different name. But like I said, you can find me on my WordPress site or on Facebook or on my number 208-310-2224. Happened to be my birthday. So, excellent. You know, there's a little bit all about me here. No. Thank you. I really appreciate being here. I appreciate the opportunity and just share the things. I don't know it all, but I know what I know, and I'm happy to share.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So please reach out to Donna and know that we are all living here in one of the most vibrant communities and have the opportunity to take advantage of so much that's right here, to be a part of positive change locally as well as globally, and I think to live in ways that are quite sustaining for all of us. So a big thanks to the community as a whole. Big thanks to Yin Radio for this forum and KRFP Moscow. And again, to Donna Mills for being here today. We will be back 2 weeks from now, every other Sunday from 2 to 4. And we're going to leave here. I'm going to leave you with a song from The Weather Machine called All Over the Land. Thanks so much and take good care.